I am the drone of a banjo's fifth string. I am the drone that gives bottom to the chanter in a highland fling. Haw, hum. I am the drone of drone itself, planted so pleasurably in the mouth. A monotone, a lodestone. I'm an MQ-9, a reaper drone, ranging wide, circling in the sky. No windows, no cockpit, no one on board. See how my hellfires fly faster than sound. I am drone, from the timbal under the cicada's wing. I gather no pollen and have no sting. Arriving unheard, I haunt the sky and inseminate the queen before I die. I am a poetry that celebrates power. I bring. The White House is empty. I bomb air. I bomb breath. My country, 'tis of thee I sing. Can everyone hear me all right? Many of the poems in my book, Charms Against Lightning, are about wandering around. For a long time, had the idea that if I just kept moving around and searching for my ideal city, I would finally find the city where I would be completely happy. This poem is about that, and it's called Utopia, both in the sense, and I mean the word both in the sense of paradise and in the sense of no place. Utopia. Finally, he's found his own city. A postcard place that anyone would like. Backlit by the romance of an unknown history. Here, sheets and hair perfume the air. Every gate is hammered silver. Every song, a song and dance. And the balloon seller bares her ivory shoulder for a kiss. The man who's spent enormously to feed a fantasy of being from no place, spent what he had and borrowed more, now is completely happy, except for an idea of an idea that he cannot outpace, that somehow he may have missed something that he should not have missed. Though no doubt this is better than lying on a cold suburban beach, admiring stars so far away, you'd be seeing them as they were before the dawn of human speech. This is another country, not an ordinary place, where a man, no matter how exceptional he felt, would finally be erased. This wandering also features in this next poem, which is about the biblical figures of Cain and Abel. According to tradition, after Cain murders his brother Abel, he's sent east into Nod. And for a long time, scholars tried to ascertain where Nod might have been. They had the idea that since Nod apparently was east of Eden, biblical scholars felt that if they could figure out where Nod was, they would know where Eden had been. And it's only in the 20th century, with a growing understanding of the Hebrew language, that people have come to understand that the word Nod actually means something completely different. So this poem is called The Land of Nod. Growing up, I barely knew the Bible, but read and reread the part when Cain drifted east, or was drawn that way, into a place of desolation, the land of Nod. There to begin with a wife of unknown origin, another race of men, under the mark of God. As a boy, I thought Nod would be a place where the blue scillas would bloom gray, a country of the rack and screw, the serrated sword, where the very serving cups were bone. As a grown man, I've heard that Nod never was a nation, of Cain's offspring or anyone, but a mistranslation of wanderer. So Cain could go wherever and be in Nod. Far more than in God, I believe in Cain, who destroyed his own brother, and therefore in any city could have his wish and be alone. This next poem is a sequel to Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. At the end of Frankenstein, the monster is on his way to the North Pole to live out the remainder of his years in frozen solitude, repenting his crimes. This poem catches up with the creature sometime later. He's now living in New York, and he's just doing his best to make a life for himself. This poem is called Frankenstein's Monster. I'm aging very slowly, because every part of me is already dead. I've spent years in the Arctic, eating seal fat and things better left unnamed. But now I've got money, and a condo on the west side. I smell like formaldehyde. My teeth are grimy, my limbs mismatched. But I'm happy in this place, where I'm one more person with panache and an ugly face. I eat well. I can walk the bridge Hart Crane walked, or get drunk and not conceal it. I'm not Boris Karloff lurching around a mute. I hate that guy. I get laid. Here, people suffer without believing that every stranger should have to feel it. The other day I walked from Cleopatra's Needle to the far side of the Harlem Mirror, thinking about the Rockefeller Center and the gigantic armillary sphere balanced on the shoulders of the Atlas statue there. My pants are fitted. My beret advances everywhere like a prowl. My name isn't Frankenstein. Frankenstein is my inventor. A big change in my life of late is that I am a father. I have a 3.5-year-old son named Henry. So this poem contains some allusions to a children's book that I'm sure many or all of you know, Goodnight Moon by Margaret Weis Brown. In case anyone doesn't know Goodnight Moon, it's a lullaby, really, and to all the things of the world, including a cow jumping over the moon. So this poem is just called Goodnight Moon. I used to be as unsentimental as anyone could be. Now I'm almost absurd, a clown carrying you on my shoulders around and around Palmer Square through the cold night wind as stores lock up and begin closing down. Good night, fair trade coffee. Good night, Prada shoes. Good night soon, my little son. You're a toothy, 2-foot-something sumo, a giddy, violent elf, jabbing your finger at the moon, which you've begun noticing in the last week or two. Moom, moom. For you, the word ends with a mumming as it begins. For me, beginnings and endings are getting hard to tell apart. There was another child your mom and I conceived who would now be reading and teaching you to read, who we threw away when he or she was smaller than a watermelon seed. The chairs, the domestic bears, the clocks, the socks, the house. Once again, a strange cow springs from the green ground, beginning the enormous leap that will carry her above the moon. This poem is called Troy. It's another new poem. The war is wrapping up, and there's nothing left of Troy. Broken stone, broken clay, a smoke stain on the sky. The Greeks even broke the skull and back of Hector's little boy. Odysseus, packing up his bags, thinks, soon I'll be home. Agamemnon's looking forward to a good meal and a bath. But this afternoon belongs to Ajax, a towering psychopath, standing by a flock of sheep that he's butchered in a rage. And like a man who's just shot up a shopping mall with a semi-automatic, Ajax can answer all this killing only with the killing of himself. Soon he'll sit down and start to weep like a naughty child full of shame, because he is a man killer, and a man killer does not kill sheep. The Greeks didn't come to halt a genocide or spread democracy. Behind their great encampment are their island kingdoms, speckled against the sea. Beyond, scavenged by turning seabirds, are the pillars of Hercules, said to bear the words, there is nothing beyond this point. This poem is called A Local History. My grandmother's house was always full of flies. They'd crawl across each other on the windowsill, or would be spinning out their noisy dying in every room. In such numbers, you could sweep forever and not get all the dead flies off the floor. Downhill in a marsh of cattails and bristle-sided reeds, milkweed pods kept cracking open, leaking seed across the air, renewing the existence of their species in the way they've done from year to year. Way back when, some hard-handed Methodist pioneer had somehow wrenched up every stone big enough to break a plow and piled them all throughout the woods, where they still were, in mounds when I was growing up, like barrows heaped above the decomposed remains of the violent Saxon kings, whose grave goods featured large in my imagination. My grandmother's gone. Before she died, she lost her words, her house, her name. But for me, she's still a hard old woman walking downhill at dawn, long into autumn, to skinny dip in her weed-choked, freezing pond. A wall of wind, a hedge of suburban snow. My father's ashes are in the ground in southern Ontario. Something I read in college, and for whatever reason have not forgotten, is that the Saxon barrow builders, surrounded by broken things they could admire and not rebuild, aqueducts and roads the Romans left behind, saw themselves as late arrivers, as an afterfolk, living on the bones of a greater folk who'd gone before. Where is the horse? Where the rider? Some now nameless Saxon wrote, grieving for a people who his own people, centuries before, had annihilated, assimilated, or driven into the sea. I'm going to read two last poems. This one is called Talking Song. Now that my work's done and it's Saturday, Now that my young son is out somewhere with his mom, I might as well roam all morning, spying on the filthy squirrels and on the shapes that disintegrating leaves have painted on the sidewalk. I might as well spend the morning talking to myself, hoping for meaning and unmeaning to braid and begin teaching me what to say. Some days I feel like a monarch at wing, meandering, not really deciding where I go, as programmed as the dimwit birds building nests of twigs and spit. Each bird pipes the song that it was taught and transmits the song to its own offspring. Earthworms driven up by last night's rain have squirmed onto the asphalt to slowly die. I save some who glue and wriggle, but there are just so many. Most I leave to fry. There's fatherhood in a grain. What love you have gets distilled into your own kin, your own kid, an eight-toothed homunculus. Excuse me. An eight-toothed homunculus clutching an acorn in his fist, bewildered that a paper plate set down on the grass on a windy day won't stay put, but lofts and spins away. By the time I'm downtown, I'm turning back, in thought, if not yet with my feet. Before I'm back on my own street, I'll have twice walked by the little wedge of ground where people of this neighborhood bury their dead dogs and cats. A rawhide bone, a ball of yarn, waterlogged by the frowsy rain. Animals have never meant very much to me, but I've got them on the brain these days. How magnetic navigation brings spawning salmon home. How predation. I'm sorry.
There's water. Thank you.
Sorry, guys. How predation, variation, and the winnowing down of things gave shape to a world of species, giving them gills, wings, and feet. But I'd rather be dead than be a creature of any other kind. I walk upright, practicing the song of my species by speaking. The last poem, the last poem I wrote at a bleak time in my life. I was living in Seattle and I wasn't sure that I wanted to go on living. And I was outside one afternoon getting pelted by freezing rain, feeling sorry for myself, and an ergonomic bicycle went by. And an ergonomic bicycle, in case anyone is not familiar, is a recumbent bicycle, is a bicycle that allows the bicyclist to lean back while his or her feet are elevated. And because I was feeling so sorry for myself, it seemed outrageous to me that I could be so sad and somebody else could just be riding his ridiculous bicycle. And I felt sure, I felt certain that there was something to say about it, but it took me a long time to figure out what. This poem is called Distracted by an Ergonomic Bicycle. On a rainy morning in the worst year of my life, as icy islets shelled the street, I shared a tremor with a Doberman leashed to a post. We two were all the world until a bicyclist shot by, riding like a backward birth, feet first, in level, gentle ease, with the season's hard breath between his teeth. The rain was almost ice, the sky mild and pale. I saw a milk carton bobbing by on a stream of melting sleet. A bicyclist. He rode away to his home, I guess. I went home where I undressed, left my jacket where it fell, went straight to bed, and slept for 2 days straight. But those clicking wheels kept clicking in my head. And though I can't say why, I felt not only not myself, but that I'd never been. That I was that man I hardly saw, hurling myself into the blast. And that everything I passed, dawn, rain, cold. The other guy, I left... I left in my wake, like afterbirth. Thank you.